Hello and welcome to this Q&A episode of the podcast. Welcome, Shona. How are you?
I am great, Emma. How are you?
I'm good. Cormac, how are you?
He's just right here. I don't want to get a boob on camera, but he is right here. He's great. He's just emptied his bowels. I had to deal with a punami, which is why we're 20 minutes late.
There was a punami.
But it was like one of those ones where I think I used an entire pack of wipes that was put everywhere. It was on me. It was on his hands, on his feet.
Do you remember when we had that discussion about what would be better to use, like recyclable nappies, or what happened about that?
That went out the window. Like, I don't know how people do that. Just with the amount of pee and poo that you have to deal with. Do you know what I think about 10 times a day? How did cave women do it? Like, you probably just walked around covered in jobby all the time.
Yeah, probably.
You just probably, like, you'd put the baby in the flowing stream and just, like...
Yeah, but also you would just have access to flowing streams. That's right. Don't have that nowadays, to be honest.
No, that's right. But yeah.
You know, hygiene. Overrated. Right, we've got really good questions, don't we?
They are amazing. They're really, really good. I've not been on the podcast for a couple of weeks, so we've got a bit of a backlog because I had my commit to six and my committed. But here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Right, so obviously too much body fat isn't good for our health, neither is too little, and it differs per person. So how do we know what a healthy amount is for ourselves, especially if we're not measuring it?
Really good question. And I think a lot of people, I mean, it's possibly overthinking it a little bit. So you're absolutely right. Being too low body fat, not healthy. Being too high body fat, not healthy. But there's this huge grey area in between where you can be pretty healthy. And it's not like for each person there is a distinct number, even on an individual level, that would be quote unquote healthiest. Like, the whole point is you're meant to sort of fluctuate around a range. And this comes up a lot with maintenance as well. And people being like, oh, well, this is like the body composition I should maintain forever. And realistically, like, your life is going to come in sort of seasons. I quite like this analogy where there's like seasons where, for example, at the moment, your main priority is Cormac, rightly so. Like, you're in a different season of your life than you were a couple of years ago. And that will change again as he grows up and as you do different things as well. And your body fat will probably change with that to some regard as well. But it's not like you're going to go from being massively underweight to massively overweight and do flip in these extremes. Like, it might mean that you're a couple of body fat percentage higher at certain times and a couple lower at certain times. And that's kind of what we need to view as maintenance, not this distinct number, but more just like it's a range that I fluctuate around. That's life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have a magic number in their head, don't they? Because, like, you've talked about it in posts before. They're like, I was so happy with myself when I was like 58 kilos and I've not been that weight for like 3 years now, and I'm like constantly chasing that weight. When it probably wasn't the weight that was making you happy, it was all the other circumstances in your life. Yeah. And probably at the time, especially if you've been doing commit to six, you'll have built muscle, you'll have changed your body composition. So at 58 kilos, you'll look completely different. And actually, you might need to accept that you're going to be a bit heavier and let go of that weight. And if you want to get down to that 58 kilos, then more is going to have to give. Like, you're going to have to make more sacrifices and say no to more things. And so, yeah, I think letting go of that perfect number is key.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people get frustrated by answers like that when you're like, oh, there's a range of body fat, like there isn't a specific number. And they're like, but why can't we measure it? And it's like, well, it's really hard to measure and you'd need to go into a lab and it's kind of irrelevant anyway, and people still want this number. And like, your analogy about the cave women is kind of a good one in some ways. It's like, actually, only very recently have we had anywhere near like the access to the amount of data that we have around health now, and yet people were still, I mean, I know that our life expectancy is much higher now than it was previously and things, but there isn't this like need to be so analytical about every single aspect of your health. Like, you don't need to know the numbers, you don't need to monitor your glucose, your body does this for you. And I wouldn't stress about what body fat percentage you are. Like, if you vaguely are in a pretty healthy BMI range, you're probably absolutely fine.
Yeah, I agree. I think like the Fitbits and Garmins and all these things that you can track now as well, it contributes to that, because like you're constantly chasing like this perfect number. I think a lot of people can get really obsessed with resting heart rates. And that's another thing that's like so dependent on a million factors.
Yeah.
A lot of them are out of your control. So yeah. Just letting go of worrying and caring about all those things, and just sticking to like your non-negotiables, the things that make you feel good every day.
Yeah, focus on the actions and let the outcomes take care of themselves is a good way to view it. And also one thing that I just don't want someone to quote the podcast and like get out of sync, but it's not just important how much body fat you have, but where it's stored, which is obviously, again, why BMI isn't a perfect predictor of health, but where that body fat's stored as well. So for some people, X body fat would be unhealthy, and for other people it would be absolutely fine. Depends on where that's being stored, primarily if it's being stored viscerally, so around your organs.
Thank you for that
public service announcement.
Right, okay, next question. This is another really good one. Obviously, they're an extreme last resort type thing, but are gastric bands actually healthy? A girl from my area had one fitted about 18 months ago. She's lost something like 8 stone, which is obviously major, but I can't quite get my head around how it can be healthy. She'd said she can only eat a side dish portion of food per meal. Is it even possible to get everything you need from a meal that size? And it must have a major mental health impact if your mind and body are telling you you want to eat, but your body can't physically let you. That's such a good question, isn't it?
And actually, that isn't exactly what happened. So a gastric band essentially cuts off part of your stomach. And one of the things that happens even before any weight loss is, I don't want to say a better regulation of hunger, but like a down regulation of hunger, like massively down regulated hunger. And part of that's because a lot of the receptors for ghrelin, which is a hunger hormone, are in the stomach. So when you cut off half of the stomach, there's less receptors for ghrelin, which means ghrelin levels are much lower. And I think I looked up the stats on this, and I think it said ghrelin levels declined even in the face of a 38% loss in body weight. And usually when you lose body weight, ghrelin levels would increase because you're like, well, there's not as much energy here, let's try and make them eat a little bit more. That's one of the reasons that dieting is hard, because when you restrict your intake, your body starts to increase hunger levels. So they experience a loss in hunger levels even when they're losing body weight, which is why it becomes that much easier to diet. And people who have gastric bands tend to have this much lower ghrelin levels, even compared to lean controls. So even compared to people who don't seem to have dysregulated hunger. So it's lower than even that. And one of the problems with being overweight and then trying to lose weight is that you can get this dysregulation of hunger. Part of that's genetic and part of that's compounded by excess body fat. And then it's really, really hard to diet, right? Because your hunger levels have ramped up so much. And this is one of the reasons that gastric bands work so well. So it's not just physically that you can't eat that much because your stomach is smaller, but it's also that you've massively reduced your hunger levels. So that last part when she was saying, oh, how is it like your body's clearly craving something and you're working against it, doesn't that affect your mental health? Like, I'm sure that getting gastric band does have mental health effects, but it's not that you would have the same hunger that you had before, but you just physically can't eat. It's actually reducing your drive to eat, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I've just been looking it up earlier. This is from a study. It says, specific literature on bariatric surgery indicates a higher prevalence of psychological comorbidities such as mood disorders, eating behavior disorders, and psychological distress, along with anxiety, personality disorders, alcohol use, and low self-esteem.
I wonder if that's causal or that's...
like associated with the type of personality that would get. Yeah, right. Okay,
yeah. So I don't know. Like, it's just interesting. I wonder how that study was done.
Yeah, because you'd have to be, like, you'd have to be pretty desperate in order to get that surgery because of, like, the massive effects it has on, like, your enjoyment of food and like, socialising and things like that. So you'd have to already be quite desperate.
And I also think, I mean, we don't just eat for hunger, right? That kind of solves some of the hunger problem with dieting, but it doesn't solve if you're overweight because you're emotionally eating. It doesn't solve those problems. So if you were overweight because you were emotionally eating or numbing like your emotions with food, then would you maybe turn to alcohol?
I know.
Like, you, so you can see how maybe that's like, there would be a connection there. But it is a really good point. And I think, well, I know that people who get this surgery do go through psychological assessments beforehand. Just, I guess, kind of to make sure that it isn't for those reasons, because this surgery is actually reversible if you force yourself to overeat. And if you're eating to numb emotions, then it's not going to solve the problem there. If you're really struggling to diet because your hunger levels are so high, it could actually be really effective. And I know that there's obviously ideally better ways to do this, but in some situations, it's actually pretty life-changing for people. And I mean, the success rates are higher than any dieting things. So I think there's like people tend to lose 35 to 40% of their body weight and sustain that at 14 year follow up.
Wow.
That's like way higher than most dieting things. I'm not suggesting that it's a good thing to do, but I do think that sometimes we like blanket everything together, like, oh, that's not good for anyone. Well, actually, in certain circumstances, that could actually be really like a better health option for someone if the alternative was to stay obese, for example.
Absolutely, yeah. And if this person's lost 8 stone, they've essentially lost an entire person body weight, then it's going to have massive positive effects on their physical health. So, but yeah, like, did you not post something like people were saying that it was like cheating?
Yeah, I think sometimes people think this, like, it's cheating. Or another thing, when those skinny jabs came out and people were like, oh, it's just cheating your way to weight. I'm like, no, it's not. It's actually allowing some people who have really dysregulated hunger to stick to a diet. And the fact that you're saying it's cheating just shows how fucking little you know.
Yeah.
About how, like, or how just little compassion. Yeah, you can not have ever been in that situation yourself, but you can have some freaking empathy. And like, if this is your job, like if this is a personal trainer saying things like this, like, you should know this stuff. You should have done your research on this. You should understand that for some people that is a viable option and that is really helpful.
Yeah, and people getting skinny jabs aren't going to put you out of a job ever. If that's what they're worried about. Right.
Agreed.
Let's find the next question. Those were from Portia. Shout out to Portia.
Shout out to Portia for the excellent questions. Yeah. Oh, someone's just commented on the live. Does that show that you can lose weight and still be unhappy? It perhaps isn't anything to do with the weight after all. Shocking.
Shocking that.
Who knew? Yeah. It does.
What type of training would you suggest to improve the amount of press-ups you can do in one go or with only short breaks in between sets? I find I can do full press-ups, diamond press-ups, etc. in sets of 10, but when we do them back-to-back at kickboxing, my muscles fatigue fast. It might just be a case of having to practice. Right, can I tell you, you might not know this about me, but there was a time in my life when I was doing like wrestling training.
Right. That, do you know what? Doesn't really surprise me.
Doesn't surprise you.
No.
I kind of thought like, so I was like acting at the time and I got into really into fitness. And then someone was like, this is a really good sort of combo for you. Because obviously like wrestling is performance. So I did it for a bit, and every training session would start with that. Have you ever seen that, like, a deck of cards game?
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, and it would take us, like, half an hour to get through.
Wait, explain it to people, because...
Okay, so basically, like, the deck, what do you call it? Like, the...
Cards.
Club, hearts, diamonds. Oh, yeah. They would, like, be an exercise, so... squats, press ups, sit ups, right? Whatever. Someone would pull the card and we'd do like 10 squats, pull another card, 8 press ups, right? And it would take us ages to get through because you've got an entire deck of cards. How many cards are in a pack? I don't know.
52, 50. Because 52 card pickup.
Right, okay, so 52, take us ages. And I remember, like, I was, like, quite good at press-ups at the time, but I'd be looking around, and everyone was doing these little, like, quarter press-ups. So when you're at kickboxing, have a look. Are people doing these, like, shitty press-ups while you're, like, chest to floor with straight arms? So yeah, don't, like, compare yourself to people who are doing shitty reps. That was my first point.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, second point is that, like, if you're always doing sets of 10 press-ups, you're going to get really good at doing sets of 10, but as soon as you try and do more of that, like, you're going to fatigue. So what I would suggest is doing like an EMOM. So every minute on the minute, do like 11 press-ups. Then tomorrow, do 12 press-ups. Next week, do 13 press-ups every minute. And it's just being so specific like that. If you want to get good at doing like high rep press-ups, you need to practice doing high rep press-ups. That's it.
Yeah, agreed. Although sometimes I think you've got to consider volume as well. Like, actually, I completely agree with what you're saying. This is a sort of different situation where I know that someone wants to really aim to get 20 press-ups and they're like, right, what I'm going to do is just see how many I can do every single day and hopefully I'll get closer to 20. And actually, in that situation, just doing max out every day probably isn't the best way to do it because you want to increase volume. So if you say that, you know, 10s may be max for you, why don't you do 3 sets of 8? So then you've got like that 2 reps in reserve. So you're not pushing yourself right to failure. This is quite important for people who want to increase pull-ups as well. I think a lot of people just do, well, I just do as many as I can. And then I just do that a couple of times a week. And it's like, actually, if you build up the volume, you'll probably get better results and you'll probably be able to do more when you do your max out test. And I just wouldn't do them that often because if you're actually doing something max out, like, it should take a lot mentally as well as physically from you. Like, I didn't do max out pull-ups all the time. I'd maybe do it. I think I was doing it, like, every month. And now I'd probably do it every six weeks or so. Because, like, that should really be, like, amping yourself up to do that. As opposed to just doing it every single day. You're probably not really pushing yourself to the max. So, yeah, that's a consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a question based.
Do you have to do loads of press ups at kickboxing? But then I assume, do you box as well at kickboxing or is it just legs?
Yeah, kickboxing is kicking and boxing, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Right, okay.
I don't actually know. I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm going to say something that's probably going to offend someone, but there was, I think it might be Taekwondo. I was watching it at the Olympics. And it's just kicking with one leg over and over and over again.
I know, but how impressive that they, like, balance on the other leg for so long.
Impressive, but kind of boring after about a minute of watching it.
I haven't actually watched it, so I don't know, but...
Okay. Right, next question. Okay, on a day when I'm doing a long run, 21 kilometers or higher, should I eat more, raise my calories? When I do the longer distances, I feel more hungry. But I'm also aware that when I know I'm doing a long run, I allow myself to eat more and go over my calories as I'll be burning them off. I feel this actually might be hindering me losing those few kilos I'd like to lose.
Good question. And yes, like, that is a long run, right? Sometimes when people say this and they're like, yeah, sometimes I do a 5K a couple of times a week. We're like, no, maybe don't account for your calories for that because it's not that many calories. If fat loss is the goal, it's just adding to your deficit. If you're doing really long runs, like 21K, you are going to be burning a fair amount of calories. The reason I never say numbers is because it depends on so many things, like how efficient you are at running, how heavy you are, how fast you're running, the terrain, what the wind is like. Like, all of these things play into it. So we couldn't say exactly how many calories it is, but it's going to be a substantial amount. Now, instead of doing what you're doing now, which sounds like you're just like, oh, yeah, I think I can eat a bit more and not putting any numbers on it, why don't you say on those days I'm going to allow myself 400 extra calories? Now, if you're then doing that consistently and you're not losing, okay, we need to amend your calories slightly. But I think you'll burn probably more than that anyway, and if fat loss is your goal, that's probably a good sort of marker at least to start with. And then once we've got consistent data, if we need to change anything, we can change things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just trying to find, someone asked a question really similar to that on the post, and I just thought it was like an interesting discussion. I think, like, yeah, agreeing before you start, like, how many extra calories you're going to have is a better idea, because sometimes as well, like, you think, oh, I want to eat a bit extra, so I'm going to run this amount, rather than I'm running this amount, so I will eat extra, and you can get into a bit of a, like, trying to run off your calories, and that's like a bad place to get into.
Yeah, I agree. And then I think mostly just because of how that makes you view exercise, like, instead of being like, oh, I love going for runs and I'm gonna fuel these runs and I'm gonna make sure that I recover properly and I eat enough to recover, that's very different than I overate last night, so I'm gonna force myself to go out for a run. You will end up resenting running. And also, it's just like not a healthy mindset to be in. And we talk about this quite a lot, but so many times, like, they're essentially the same actions, but your mindset behind your actions is so important. And actually, one of those is really unhealthy and one of those is really healthy, depending on how you think about what you're doing. So, yeah.
Agreed. Okay. If you're not hungry, should you force yourself to eat to get the calories? If the only appealing thing is something without a lot of nutritional value, should you eat it to get enough calories? Or did you read, it was at Ashley the other night, I felt really sorry for her. She'd made like a really healthy dinner, and then the smell of the salmon, she just couldn't eat it, so she had to put it in the bin. That's such a shame. But I have actually been there myself. Like, I remember, like, my mum won't listen to this podcast at all, so I can say this. Right, so she has made us loads of food for, like, after.
Yeah, but your sister might listen. Is she going to feed this back?
She won't. Right, so she made us this dish, and it could have been nice, but it was essentially, like, the chicken was, like, boiled.
Yeah.
And I was, like, trying to eat it, and I was like, I know this is going to be really healthy for me, but I just couldn't. It was just fart. It was like boiled chicken. Oh,
yeah. Do you know what? So salmon is like my favourite food.
I know, me too. Love it.
But I did once think, frozen salmon can't be that bad. Absolutely disgusting. Like, vile. You know, it comes in like a little package or something. I was like, well, surely it's just salmon frozen. No, it's not. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's not.
So is it, like, a bit watery as well?
It's kind of watery, but it's just, like, it just doesn't taste anything like salmon. Like, there's no comparison to salmon at all.
Right.
So wouldn't recommend that. So maybe, Ashley, if that's what you tried, try something that's, you know, fresh.
Go to the fishmongers, get yourself some fresh salmon, darling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're not hungry, should you force yourself to eat to get the calories? No, you should not, because, like, then you might be in a situation where you're, like, forcing it down, feeling miserable, resenting what you eat. So maybe if you're in Ashley's situation, you need to work a little bit harder to make food that tastes delicious.
Basically, Ashley, you're crap at cooking.
Ashley, what the hell did you do to the salmon? Did you boil it like my mum did?
Oh. No, not picking on Ashley, but...
No, we're not. And it wasn't even Ashley that asked this question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It wasn't. I was just remembering what
you did. So, I think, yeah, normally, again, this always depends, right? Normally, we'd be like, if fat loss is your goal, let's say your calorie target is 1,800 and you've eaten 1,600 calories and you're not hungry, makes absolutely no sense to force yourself to eat something to hit those calories. There are certain situations where, you know, sometimes people will take the piss bit and be like, yeah, I just ate 800 calories and I'm not even hungry. And you're like, okay, well, that's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
See, those people, I've, like, I don't think I've ever done that a day in my life, apart from when I was, like, maybe really ill or something like that. But, like,
yeah,
if I
don't know,
800 calories, I would be so hungry. I'd be so miserable.
Yeah. And also, like, sometimes you might have a day where, I don't know, you're massively stressed or something and you're like, yeah, actually, I could just eat one meal. That's not a good thing. Like, a bigger deficit isn't necessarily a good thing. And like, it will catch up with you. You might be thinking, oh, I can do that. Like, I feel fine. Yeah, well, tomorrow you won't, or the next day. So if you start massively reducing your calories and just being like, oh, I'm not hungry, your adherence will slip at some point. And often it turns into this over-restriction, over-indulgence cycle, which we're trying to get everyone to avoid. That's why we are like, stay as close to your calorie target as possible. If you're a couple of hundred calories under, this is why we sort of suggest this 20% range. Because for some people, you know, if your target's, if you're a small person and your target's 1500 and you've only eaten 1200, that's probably not enough. If your target's 2000 and you've eaten 1800, yeah, fine. Fat loss is your goal. Then I wouldn't force yourself to eat when you're not hungry, generally.
Mm-hmm.
But just don't take that out of context and be like, oh, you said not to eat when I'm not hungry, so I'm just never eating again. Well, yeah, basically that.
Yeah, and also, like, if you want to have that, everyone's been saying it recently, body like Emma, right?
Literally everyone's been saying that recently.
I was listening to the live the other day and Andy was reading out the question and I went, oh, because they'd said, if I want to get a body like you, Catherine or Emma, right? And obviously because he was reading it out, like I was like, and they just missed out me. But obviously it was like written to me or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I was like, I actually went,
How very dare you.
How very. Do you not want a body like me as well? So Emma's body has not got there from eating, like from starving herself. Emma's body's got there from fueling herself, from building that muscle. And if you don't eat enough, then you're going to lose that muscle. You're not going to build it. So don't deprive yourself, hun. Okay, so I don't want to go on about weight, as I know and understand that the number on the scales has no weight.
Lols.
Oh, I see what she's saying doing there. Behind my end goal. But will my weight go down at all during the commit to six period if I stick to a calorie deficit, etc.? Sounds like this person just needs a bit of reassurance.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're here for. Realistically, if you have a lot of body fat to lose and you're creating a calorie deficit, yes, you will lose weight. Whether that's in the first 2 weeks, whether that's in the second 2 weeks, and how much that is and when it shows on the scales, we don't know. We can't predict that. And anyone who's telling you that they can is bullshitting you. And kind of what we were saying at the start, like, focus on your actions and let the outcomes take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. That's the bet, like, for everything in life, really, but especially for fat loss. Just focus on making sure you are creating that deficit, making sure you are resistance training, you are getting enough protein, hitting your non-negotiables, doing your check-ins, which you obviously are because you have a question here. But hit all those things and the outcome will take care of itself.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, this might be a little bit of real talk.
Oh!
Ultimately, you are in control of this. We are here, right? We're here to guide you and help you get there and support you and be your biggest cheerleaders. But it's not like you hand over all responsibility to commit to six. And then you're like, well, nothing happened. I didn't lose any weight or I didn't achieve my goal. Thanks, commit to six. Thanks, ESG. No, we're just here supporting you, but you do have to put the work in. Like, you have to like lean into that challenge. Because like, if you're in a calorie deficit, you will lose body fat. Like, that's the facts. So yeah. Well, we reassure you, might just need a little gentle bit of real talk as well.
Yeah, agreed. And it sounds like she's doing everything right. And it doesn't surprise me that in the first 2 weeks, some people haven't seen weight loss, some people have. Again, kind of depends on how much body fat you have to lose, how frequently you're weighing yourself, what time of the cycle you're at, if you've increased your food volume, all of these things play into it. So keep focusing on those behaviors and try not to worry too much about what the scales are doing.
Okay. Context. That's quite a long one. I am living back in the same house as my parents. I actually own part of it, so can't just move out again financially. I basically feel sabotaged in the same way I did in late teens, early 20s. The food that comes in will include things I have put on the order, but also treats that are aimed at me. I am an adult, so I'm choosing what I eat and if I eat the treats. This includes takeaway nights. I have had many conversations asking for the temptations to not come in the house, but reminded to just don't eat them if you don't want them. I understand the link between making someone happy and if food has previously worked, then that is the natural go-to, but I am not happy and I recognise how ridiculous my lack of control is. I haven't asked the question yet, just had a poor me moment. How do I move forward? There's the question. There's so much here. There's so much here to talk about. And it's kind of similar to the last live that I did with Emma, is you met someone and they were like, oh, I remember what you were like. You like,
yeah.
And this is kind of like that. So you
And I find this with, especially with your parents, but
with
like, I did a tweet about this, but it basically just said people from your past will generally assume that you are the same as when you knew them. Mm. And that's not your problem. And you can waste loads of energy trying to change their minds. It, in a way, it feels a little bit different when it's your parents, but they'll always see you as their little girl. They'll always know better than you do. This is also why it's really hard to give your own parents advice about like healthy eating and things like that. Like, you're always, you know, you're not your professional self. Like, my parents don't take advice from me. You're not your professional self. You're like their daughter, you know, and you'll always be in that mold. And I think the best thing to do here, although it might not be your fault, it might not be the perfect situation, I'm sure them behaving differently or not bringing in those foods would make it easier. You need to focus on what you can control, which is your response. And you've kind of said that in the question. Like, I know that it's within my control still, but that's what you need to focus on because that's what you have control over.
Yeah. And it would be so helpful if your parents like stopped buying treats like that. It would be so helpful. But two things. First of all, if they part own the house, like, they're allowed to eat the food that they enjoy too. So you can't really control what other people are eating.
I love that you're like, only because they partly own the house. Otherwise, no. Your house, well, your rules.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But they partly own the house, so they have to eat the food they enjoy. Secondly, it's way more impressive to us and actually like important to us as well that you learn how to exist in a house with food like that. Because like, it would be so easy to commit to sex if you just didn't have access to any of that stuff. But if you've got access to it and are able to be around it, say no to it, or say yes to just a little bit of it, then that is equipping you with habits that are going to last for a very long time. So it's harder for you. It sounds like you've got it a bit harder because you've got people that are not making it easy for you, but it doesn't mean that it's impossible.
Yeah, I agree. And this is kind of related to when people are like, oh, you know, I just take all foods that I like out of the house and then it's really easy to stick to my diet, and you're avoiding the problem.
Mm.
Because at some point you're going to want to be able to enjoy a couple of pieces of chocolate instead of feeling like, if it's even in the house, I'll eat the whole bar. So it's forcing you to do that, which actually is a good thing long term. Mm-hmm. It just might seem harder at the moment, but the hard things are generally the things that we should be doing. So yeah, it is a bit harder at the moment and there is that temptation there. But if you can live with that temptation, which realistically is always there, whether you buy the food or not, like, it's just adding another layer. And actually the ability to have it there and be like, no, I'm choosing not to have that at the moment, it doesn't align with my goals. Or I'm choosing to have a small bit, knowing there's more in the kitchen, but I'm only going to have this small bit. That shows us way more like restraint and way more likelihood that you're going to be able to maintain these changes long term. And also just the quality of life that we want you to have. Like, we want you to be able to be around these foods and not feel controlled by them.
Mm.
So many people live in that, like, where they're like, I couldn't even think about having chocolate in my house. That is not how we want you to live. So,
no. And if it's not hard, Emma's not interested.
So there's
how
that.
How many people commented on that with, like, innuendo?
I feel like, obviously it was an innuendo.
Oh yeah, it's so obvious.
But I think some people sent me it and were like, you do
Did
know
you
that
realize?
Yeah, I'm like, yes, I do. That was like that was kind of the point of why I said it that way. But thanks for ruining the joke.
Exactly. Someone commented saying like things my mum says to me and I'm like,
yeah, what? I know. I was like, what on earth? I was like, that's very worrying. You know, I put something up today about like, essentially it was about creating your own routine and not like being overwhelmed by choice.
Mm.
And someone was like, so you're into Marxism?
What?
Well, they were like basically like, oh, so now you're a dictator. I was like, okay, that was a slight, that was like a slight leap.
That's a reach. What's that called? That's a logical fallacy. Like, Andy posts things like that all the time. If you say like if you say one thing in the fitness industry, they're like, oh, so you're saying that you hate this?
Yeah. Like, there's one that goes around and it's like, I really like apples. And someone's like, what? So you think that all pears are the worst things in the world? And you're like, okay.
Okay. Plus, you're like, I'm a fitness page. Let's keep it to that. I'm not talking about Marxism.
Well, I did make the mistake of talking about the vaccine, which was quite enjoyable. I've been screenshotting some of the responses to Hannah, who's like jumped in on some of them with, thank you, Hannah. But I think my favorite was one woman who was like, I had a UTI after the vaccine and I still have it now. And I'm like, okay, but these two things aren't related. It's like being like, yeah, well, 3 weeks after the vaccine, I got ran over by a bus and there. Like, it's got nothing to do with anything.
Yeah. I'm sorry you wiped back to front, Sandra. Not our problem. Nothing to do with the vaccine.
Yeah, do you know what? I've been sleeping around a lot, but I'm pretty sure that it's the vaccine, actually.
Imagine that was a side effect.
What, UTIs?
No, that you, like, started sleeping around a lot.
I mean, maybe it is.
Wow. Right, should we have another question?
Yes.
Okay, really anxious about managing my diet over the next week or two due to being on night shifts. Any ideas, advice on managing hunger during this time? I often crave sweet things and crisps, maybe because I don't fancy a meal at 2 a.m. I find it really hard to manage my diet and I'm often just want something easy, microwavable snacks because it's exhausting and having to cook is literally the last thing I want to do. I also think I feel hungrier due to lack of sleep, and especially if things get unexpectedly busy on shift, I can't eat when I'm hungry. I think this is probably leads me to overeating.
Yeah, so common. And actually, great timing, because the post I did this morning is basically directly related to this. So you're essentially saying you make poorer decisions when you're tired, emotional, overhungry. We all do. That's totally normal. And obviously you work shifts, which makes it a hell of a lot harder because you're going to be in those situations more often. This is such simple advice, but plan ahead. So instead of waiting until you get home and you're tired, emotional, hungry, just plan what you're going to have. So when you get home, you have a nice meal ready for you. That's it, really. That's all you can do. And that's actually normally all you need to do. Just plan ahead. When are you going to get... Like, if you can bring some snacks into work as well that are maybe better for you, or that could you could eat quite quickly if you've got busy shifts and things, then ideally you'd be able to do that. But I also know that realistically a lot of nurses, or is she a nurse, did you say?
No, she didn't. No. Say
okay, but I mean, like, whatever your job is, but I know that, like, I work with a lot of nurses and sometimes they're like, no, but you literally can't even just go and eat a protein bar. Yeah, so sometimes you will be over hungry, but if you have a plan in place, that's a good thing to do. So and also, like, just another tip, if you are in the situation where you're over hungry, one, slow down. Because normally you run into the house and you're like, but, and actually maybe you did make a nice meal, but while you were making the nice meal, you ate like a whole bag of crisps because you're just like running around like mad. So slow down, have a cup of tea, sit down and enjoy something. And actually you'll probably find like that was enough, but it's the overeating often comes from like the speed at which you're eating and you're like, oh my God, I'm so hungry. I'm rushing to do everything. And I know that that's like easier said than done, but just sit down and enjoy a meal instead of trying to cram everything in as you're cooking. So, yeah.
Great. Okay, so in the new committed workouts, shoulder and deadlift, what is the benefit of lying cable curls and lying tricep extension over standing ones? I don't know what the actual exercises are. What are they? Are they like, is it literally just lying on your back?
Yeah, lying down. Doing bicep curls with the cables.
Right, okay. So it's not like you've got your feet off the floor, you're not adding in an ab exercise. No.
And it's part of this, especially with the biceps, like you'll find it's much harder because you're not able to use your body as momentum. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So it just isolates the muscle a little bit more rather than you sort of like cheating the movement a little bit. And even though you think you're not, when you lie down, you're like, oh, I am a little bit. So that's why it's there. And also kind of just to mix things up a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought, like,
let's have you do some weird stuff in the gym.
Yeah, see, I'm not going to lie, if I walked past someone doing that, it would make me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you feel self-conscious doing it, obviously I don't have that problem. Then you can just do standing ones. There's not a huge difference. But you will notice that you probably feel it more in the muscle when you're lying down because you're isolating that muscle a little bit more.
Here's a tip. See if you want to show everyone that you're feeling it more, just like make more noise in the gym so that everyone knows that it's like a better way to do the exercise rather than just standing.
Yeah, just lie on the floor doing curls, screaming as you do each rep.
Yeah, going, oh, I really feel that. Yes.
God, that feels so much better than standing up.
And then no one will ask. And actually, you'll find next week everyone's doing it.
Yeah. Literally everyone.
Yeah. I just walk into the gym, everyone's lying on the floor doing any exercise. Right, okay. Next. Oh, I love this question. Okay. Partner wants to lose weight and get fit, back in shape. Think he has considered joining Commit to Six, but point blank refuses to count calories. If he refuses to calorie count, how else can he monitor cals? He is super stubborn about it. And I know him. He is extremely stubborn about it. He's like, nope, nope. You will never get me tracking calories ever.
That's honestly, that's fine.
Yeah.
Ideally, you would just for the awareness of things. Like, there's a lot of, like, quote-unquote healthy foods which are quite high in calories. And when you start tracking calories, you're like, oh, orange juice really adds up. Or that handful of nuts that everyone told me was healthy is actually quite a lot of calories. Maybe I should monitor that a little bit more closely. So it gives you food awareness, but there's like you don't need to count calories to lose weight. And you can lose weight via portion sizes. And we've already spoken about this in this podcast, but it's only been quite recently that we've had MyFitnessPal and the ability to like in any way accurately track calories. And yet people still managed to lose weight before that.
Yep. Totally. Like my friend, her dad is a farmer on Shetland, right? So he is not using MyFitnessPal, but he's just lost 10 kilos and he literally did it by doing things like not eating cheese and eating less biscuits. Like, see if you're the sort of person, like someone posted in the group earlier saying that they realized they had 2 pints of Stella a day, right? That's quite a lot. And they were like, right, okay, I need to completely stop this. I need to cut that all out and I'm going to have so many extra calories. You don't actually have to go to that extreme. Like I worked out that if you just swapped one of your pints of Stella for one gin and Slimline, you'd have an extra 1,000 calories a week. And that's still drinking every day. So just like...
Yeah, which we probably wouldn't recommend. Like, I absolutely agree with you. Like, yeah. You don't... If you're like, I really love beer. Yeah. Is Stella beer?
Stella is beer. Yeah, it's lager.
I really love it. And then you're like, I'm just going to cut it all out. Probably a really bad idea. And again, it kind of... It's similar to what we were talking about with the food. Like, you can avoid the problem by never having it in your house. Or you can be like, yeah, do you know what? I do enjoy drinking, but I'm going to do it twice a week instead of every day. I'm going to do it once a week instead of every day because then it becomes a bit of a treat and I can still enjoy it, but I trust myself not to go overboard. Like that's the ideal situation. And I know that people see alcohol in a slightly different way because of alcoholics, and actually in that situation cutting out completely might be the right thing to do. But I like a lot of people aren't alcoholics and just need to reduce the amount of alcohol they drink, not assume that you need to completely cut it out. Yeah, you might, yeah. Have you checked if actually you're just Scottish?
But yeah, basically, like, with Commit to Six, like, tracking calories is just one part of it, and we get you to follow so many other non-negotiables that if you did them without tracking calories, you would still achieve your goals. Like, if you have, I think just doing 12K steps a day and your 6 fruit and veg would dramatically transform a lot of people's diet.
Oh, like, yeah. If you just thought, I'm not tracking, but I'm going to build each of my meals around protein.
Yep.
I'm going to hit my 6 fruit and veg. Or like each meal, I'm going to think protein, veg portion, and like I'm going to base each meal around that. going to get my steps in, going to do my workouts, going to do my morning routine. You don't need to get that anal about everything. Like, you just do that and hit that consistently. Especially as a man as well, because you just have that many more calories to play with a lot of the time.
I know. I hate them. I don't. Okay, next question. Went to the physio earlier in the week as my knees have been making a cracking noise, no pain. She said it's most likely as I have small mobile kneecaps. and I don't know why I find that funny. and I need to strengthen my medial, I think, quads. Have a couple of exercises to do, but any tips on what exercises to do and or avoid? So I have this as well. It's called crepitus.
What, apparently, small kneecaps?
I have small mobile kneecaps. No, I have knees that, like, see when I'm walking up
the stairs? You've got knees? Oh, no.
Like, you can hear me coming. It's like, oh, really? crunch. Like, yeah, it's called crepitus. Doesn't hurt. And I remember, like, a physio saying that if something doesn't hurt, then don't really worry about it. Apparently, it's really common in women to have crepitus. Especially in your knees. That was what I was told by a surgeon once. Not that I was going to them for the knee, I was just like chatting about it with them.
And you're one of those, like, really annoying people. Did you meet them at a bar and you're like, do you want to listen to my knee crack? What do you think?
I've 100% been that person. So yeah, it could be that your physio is just like, because some physios will tell you you've got a problem so that you keep coming back to them, and then you like book a block of six. But generally, if something doesn't hurt, then don't worry about it. And if they've said to strengthen your quads, then the program that you're following on Commit to Six will have lots of exercises that strengthen your quads, so you don't need to do any extra or like special things there. Yeah, do you have anything to add on that?
No.
Do you know that's all my questions? Shall we move on?
Oh, excellent. Let's just answer the ones on the live, and then I'm going to record a very special new lecture for EIQ.
Yay! Buzzing.
Yay! Oh, okay. Also, I have... Okay, so I'd like some advice on public speaking.
What? For me?
Well, yeah, because you're, one, very good at it. Two, you have your drama qualification, acting experience.
Right.
Well, just generally, what advice do you have?
Okay, so the first thing that, like, so if you're public speaking, right? I assume, is it at like a conference or something?
Yeah.
So chances are people have like specifically decided to come and see Emma Story Gordon, right?
Right.
So they're fans of you. So the way that that like gets me through it is that I just imagine everyone in the room is my biggest fan. We're all best friends. We're all going to have a really nice time. And basically that kind of gets me through it.
Like, yeah, okay, that's nice.
You,
yeah.
Everyone's there to see you and wants you to do well. Like, do you know how awkward it is? Like, see, have you ever been to like something like that and someone's really awkward and embarrassed and shy, and how painful it is to watch?
Yeah.
So no one wants you to do that.
Do you know what, though? I will say, anyone who's ever, like, and I try and do this now, but whenever I give a talk, there's always, hopefully, at least one person who seems, like, really engaged. Now, there's always some people, like, on their phone or, like, doing something else or chatting away. And there's usually, like, one or two people that just, like, smile the whole way through, which is so encouraging. If you just, like, focus on those people. So whenever I'm sitting in a talk now, I try and be that person. I'm like...
Yes,
like nodding along to everything, and that gives you so much confidence. And you probably think sitting there that like people on stage don't really notice, but actually you looking engaged or not like playing on your phone the whole time, that makes so much difference.
Totally. But it is really easy to focus in on that one person. It's just like anything else, like you'll get 100 positive feedbacks on Commit to Six, and if you have one negative, you're like
yeah.
But it's really easy to focus on that person if they're like sitting in the front row texting. But again, it's just more a reflection on them and their ignorance and rudeness rather than what you're doing.
Yeah, and like, some people just have like resting bitch face, don't they?
Yeah, they do. What is it about it that makes you like nervous about public speaking? Like, what is it?
Everyone's quite nervous about public speaking, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit worried I'll just forget what I have to say. I mean, I do enough podcasts and stuff that I should be all right.
No.
But I think it's just like under that extra pressure, right?
Well, you are so knowledgeable. Like, what would make me nervous about doing public speaking in that setting is like feeling like I didn't know enough and that people would know more than me. Whereas that is never, ever going to be the case with you.
I don't think that's
ever.
True. But thanks. Ever. Do you know what's making me a little bit more nervous is I'm doing it with Amelia.
Okay, so she might know a wee bit more.
So yeah, she's like very good. But then, in a way that's good because I feel like it levels me out, like makes me level up.
Absolutely. And if there's like, what I love about listening to you and Amelia talk is that there's always like a little debate and that is so
drama.
Much more interesting. So yeah, are you having like a sort of free chat or is it like something that you've got planned out?
So this is IFS this weekend and There's the first day is like round table discussion, so one of them will be quite interesting. Amelia's going to host it. Is the fitness industry sexist?
Is the fitness industry sexist?
Well, we'll see, won't we?
ESG, what's your thoughts?
Well, I'll have to figure them out. I don't want to give away all my thoughts beforehand.
Okay.
I think people might be quite surprised. And just about some of the arguments I put forward, I think.
If you're watching on the live, do you think the fitness industry is sexist? Comment below.
I think there are elements of it that are, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. Like, in fact, the reason that that's a discussion is because there was no women on the lineup. And then they were, and do you know what? Kind of respect to them for being like, one, okay, let's put some women on. And two, let's also have a discussion about this. Instead of it, what I think most places would just be like, well, there's no women online, like just kind of like put their head in the sand. Whereas They were like, oh, actually, that's a fair point.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make a change here. Still not great because could have realized that beforehand. But it's kind of respect for that, I think.
Mm-hmm. I like the thing that I think is not necessarily just specific to the fitness industry and. It is just like life, really. But like, I feel like as a woman, you have to work a little bit harder for people to listen to what you say and people to actually trust and believe what you say. Whereas a man can just like literally like open his mouth, let his belly rumble, and people will be like, yeah, clapping hands emoji, love it, 100, that emoji, fire emoji, all
yeah.
Emojis.
No, I think you are right. And there's even research around this that people trust a man's voice over a woman's voice and people see it as more intelligent as well. So even when people are reading out the same scripts of something, they will rate a man's voice as more intelligent than a woman's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's just like, I mean, that's just like sociology, isn't it? I don't know.
So
if
you
that's
have to
word.
Be like 20% more intelligent than a man to seem at the same intelligence level.
Well, you're 100% more intelligent than quite a lot of men that will be there. So you got it, girl.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be good.
How do we watch it?
I don't know if it is being filmed. Probably will be.
So you have to actually physically be there. It's not on
you
Zoom
have
or
to
anything.
Come to London.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Well, and then we're doing another talk the next weekend in Edinburgh.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, I'll tell you later something. Okay, so right, well, we answer this one question on the live from Rebecca.
Yeah.
When you mention resistance training, does that include boot camps, i.e. 30-second stints on different exercises using weights like thrusters, slam ball, sled push, etc.?
Yes and no. Like, yeah, it's kind of resistance training, but there isn't like definitive things, I guess. Like, if you think of exercise as like a spectrum, on one side you've got endurance exercise, on the other side you've got maximal strength exercise. Boot camps are probably erring more on the side of resistance training, but they're not like as resistance training-y as lifting weights with adequate recovery in terms of their ability to build muscle. Now, they're freaking awesome, and if you enjoy them, great. Like, you'll probably build a bit of muscle, you'll definitely build a bit of fitness. And if you enjoy doing that, then we don't want to stop you doing that. Is that specifically resistance training? Like, I don't know. Depends. Like, yeah, you could argue it either way, couldn't you?
Mm. Yeah, and not all boot camps are created equally, are they?
True. You'll... Like, not all CrossFit is created equally.
No, like you can, yeah, like I could go into that, but yeah, like it depends on who's coaching it, depends on what equipment they have available, and like if they've given you a warm up, because sometimes with boot camps, like they can just throw you in, and then like you're actually like not fully doing the full like whatever full movement, so you're not really
Yeah,
getting
like
that
back to
strong.
your half press ups and stuff.
Exactly. Have you got time for another question?
One more, yeah.
I like this one from Tamsin. Oh no, okay, I'll actually do it in order. Right, okay. No, let's go for the one from Tamsin. I promise Vicky will come back to yours. Can you talk a bit more about the morning routine? Why is it so important? I'd be interested to hear what you four do as your routine. Ooh.
I think it's so important. I think it's so important to how productive I am, how I feel in the morning, how my day goes. Like, it's so important to me. Less so on the physical side and more just like mentally and the choices you make going forward. And in some ways, it's like using the sunk cost fallacy against you. So you're investing a little bit in your goal. So you've started your day by investing in your goal. That means that even really without thinking about it, the rest of your choices are much more likely to be in line with your goals. And you're kind of like, it's the same notion as, oh, I've eaten really well all day, so I better make sure I go to the gym today. Or the opposite, which usually happens is, oh, I went out for lunch and now I can't bother to go to the gym because I haven't eaten well anyway, or vice versa. So it's like the compounding actions that really, really helps with mindset. Mine is get up, go for what is a very short walk. Like, I think it takes me about 10 minutes, but it's literally like along the front where I live and then back. Have a coffee, do a little bit of journaling, and then I do my pull-ups, push-ups, squats. That's it.
Okay, confession. I don't really have a morning routine right now. I have a small baby. And
Shoddy.
actually, I don't really think I had a morning routine before, because I don't necessarily feel like the morning routine is like the game changer for me in order to like do the things that I need to do. However, I was thinking about this. See, when I'm on holiday, I always have a morning routine because I want to get the most that I possibly can out of my holiday. So like I'm not going to stay in bed all day. Like I'll get up, I'll have a drink of water, I will have my coffee. I'll always have the water first before the coffee, because I was getting into a habit of like,
Hydrate before you caffeinate.
love that saying. And then I don't do like squats, blah blah blah. I do sun salutations because I'm a yoga teacher. But I love sun salutations, and they proper wake you up. And what I like about them as well is there is like a strength element to them, but there also is like a nice stretch in them. And I actually have a YouTube tutorial on my channel of sun
Post it in
salutations,
commit to six.
which I will post in Commit 6. So yeah, I do see the value in a morning routine, and I think especially if you're struggling with sticking to the things that we're asking you to do, that putting a little bit more effort into your morning routine will be your game changer.
I also think sometimes having a break from it is good. Even if it's just like, I normally don't do it on the weekend, but then by Monday I'm like buzzing to do it again.
Really? Right.
Yeah. And I notice how, well, I mean, unsurprisingly, I'm like so much less productive on the weekend. I don't know. It's possibly because it's the weekend, but yeah, I just think that even with routine, it's good to have a bit of a break from routine because it can get a bit stale.
How nice is that feeling of like smugness when you've done something like that and it sets you off on the right path? And I
Yeah,
think
you
like,
can feel like you're better than everyone for doing your morning routine. Well done, guys.
exactly. And you like that feeling, like if we could bottle it and sell it, we'd make so much money. So yeah, try and make yourself feel as like smug as possible.
Do you know when
And
I
then
used to really get that was working as a face-to-face PT? Because I used to get up mega early. I think I'd have clients like 6, 7, 8,
yep.
train, and then I'd leave the gym and it would be like 10 a.m. and I'd see people coming in being like, good morning, and I'd be like, it's literally lunchtime for me. Like, I've done so much already. Yeah, that's when I had the most smoke.
That I 100% agree with you. Like you would come in and it was like the first thing that people were doing that day, and you'd already like worked for 6 hours. But then I would go home and sleep.
Yeah, no, same. Then I'm like, oh, but I don't do anything past 3 p.m. Like, never. But still, why is it that you still feel a little bit better having done it first? I think for me, it's just because I'm like, well, it's done now. It's out the way. Mm. As opposed also, to...
Like, you're clearly a morning person. Like, I'm a morning person as well. And it takes a lot. See, if you're not a morning person, like, I can't identify with not being a morning person.
No.
So, like, I do feel for the people on Commit to Six that are night owls, and we're asking them to, like, get up. Drink
well, not really, because you could still get, I mean, assuming that you don't have to be at work by nine, like, it doesn't matter when you do your morning routine.
Yeah, that's true.
Just whenever
true.
You get up.
Yeah, you could get up at the crack of countdown and then do your morning routine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, do it, Tamsin. Do it.
Do it. Yeah, and even like, do it for a week. And if you don't notice any difference whatsoever, fine, don't do it.
We'll give you your money back. No, sorry, don't quote me.
We won't, but you will see a difference.
Yeah, and the morning routine doesn't have to be exactly what we've laid out. Like, you can add in bits, take away bits, just as long as it like becomes a routine.
Like, yeah, if you're like, do you know what? I really want to get good at sun salutations. Do that instead of the mm-hmm. press-ups or something. But if you're like, oh, I really want to get good at press-ups, do your press-ups. If you're like, I've got an injury and I need to do this little routine every day for rehab, do that as your morning routine. Like, you can amend it. It's just there as an example.
Yeah. What I will say about my sun salutations video is I've got my yoga voice on. So it's nothing like this voice
me.
On. No, it's like, welcome to my video of sun salutations. I love sun salutations. They wake me up in the morning. And I've also like filmed it outside, so like you can hear the birds, and it's quite a relaxing video.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks guys. We will see you later in the week.
Love you, bye.